Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
And joining us from over in Palm Beach is Palm Beach Post political editor Antonio Fins. Welcome, Antonio.
Hola, caballeros. Good to be with you again.
Good to have the band back together. Well, Governor Ron DeSantis took an axe to the coronavirus-battered state budget this week and hacked off $1 billion in spending. Meanwhile, the governor signed a series of significant bills into law and continued to face questions about his handling of the coronavirus outbreak as cases surge. We'll talk about all that and more, but first... Gentlemen, did you bring some numbers here? How about you, John?
Zach, I sure did. My number this week is 390.
190. All right. How about you, Antonio?
You know what? After going high so many weeks in a row, I'm going low with number three.
Three. And I'm in the middle there with 6.4. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Florida lawmakers were in the final stage of putting together a budget when the coronavirus hit, and it didn't take into account the massive drop in state revenues from having people confined to their homes for more than a month. It was clear the budget would need to be trimmed, and DeSantis finally made his cuts public this week. John, what stood out to you about where DeSantis chose to trim up the budget?
Well, $1 billion is a lot of money, and DeSantis went out of his way to say that about half of the vetoes included money for programs and projects that he had proposed. But he had gotten rid of $20 million that he would have received for his Florida Jobs Growth Grant Fund. This is a governor-directed economic development program that was started under former governor Rick Scott. DeSantis also once wanted to preserve all of the state's affordable housing money and spend it on just that, preventing this pool of money from being diverted into other areas, as it has been done almost annually for the past 20 years. But instead, he vetoed $225 million from it, saying that federal CARES Act money is available for mortgage and rent relief programs, which it is. But still, some say that the state's economic crisis right now demands even more be made available to help people struggling to stay in their homes and apartments. DeSantis also vetoed a couple of kind of Republican sacred cows in a way. He largely because of changes that have been spawned by this pandemic, he vetoed almost $135 million in school recognition money, largely because schools have waived grading requirements for this year. Those are what they use to base, you know, and hand out this award money to A-graded schools. Next year is going to be kind of a Lake Wobegon in Florida, I guess, where everybody will be considered above average, but there are no awards going to be made. And the governor, lastly, one other thing was he vetoed $41.6 million from the Aaron Feist School Guardian Program, which was launched following the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shootings. Now this money can be used to train teachers and other school personnel to be armed guardians, but it hasn't drawn that much interest and as far as participation in this program. And it's clearly been controversial, especially the idea of adding teachers to this roster of armed personnel. The money is still there for the program and for other levels of school security, but this was sort of leftover money that was going to be redirected back into the program. Well, that's not going to happen now. The governor seemed to see this money as something that's not really needed in the budget right now. So that's gone too, even though it was only 2 years ago that it was unveiled with great fanfare by the Republican-led legislature. What did endure in the budget, though, are some DeSantis favorites, $625 million for water projects and Everglades restoration. This is part of his effort to fight blue-green algae and red tide, which has been plaguing the state for a couple of years now. And this is the second installment in a four-year plan that he unveiled soon after being elected. And he also kept $100 million for Florida Forever, the state's environmental land buying program, which is always, it seems like, on the chopping block. And certainly it seemed like this year was potentially going to, you know, be trimmed back, but he retained that. And then lastly, just also big, you know, he continued to spend $500 million on teacher salary increases, and he also approved a 3% pay raise for state workers. He had been an advocate of the teacher pay raise that brings base salaries to $47,500, and it kind of made sense that that would survive since he wanted it. The state worker increase, though, he did not propose, and that looked threatened in this current climate. But there it is. You know, the vetoes help him pad the state's budget reserves, and they also are expected to precede some limits that he's going to impose on agency spending in coming weeks. These are all steps that may position the state to kind of limp through this budget year if tax collections continue to be suppressed because of a lack of business activity.
Yeah, it's really interesting what he didn't cut. He didn't cut the teacher pay raises. He didn't cut the environmental spending in the budget, and he didn't cut the state worker pay raises. And none of those three has been like huge priorities for Republicans over the years. So for DeSantis to hold on to those, especially at a time when the budget, you know, is facing, you know, the state is facing just a massive drop in state revenues. You know, it's a pretty interesting move for him. Antonio, anything that stands out to you about these budget cuts?
Yeah, and two areas in particular. One is that the governor removed one of the vetoes. It was $1.5 million in funding to expand the Bay of Pigs Brigade 2506 Museum in Little Havana, and that's notable because the group that has Donald Trump's ear on Cuba issues is the Bay of Pigs Veterans Group. Previous Republican presidents, even Democrats have really been the ear. The ones that have been the power brokers in policy toward Cuba have been, you know, the Cuban American National Foundation. But with Trump, it's really been the Veterans Brigade. And of course, we know that Trump and DeSantis are very close political allies. And, you know, DeSantis, kind of owes the governorship to Trump in large measure. But it didn't help the Bay of Pigs veterans because they lost $1.5 million for the expansion of their museum. And then the other area that I thought was really intriguing was a bunch of cuts in and around key areas of Miami-Dade. And one of them, for example, Sunny Isles, it's a beach city just north of Miami Beach. They lost $1 million for a pedestrian bridge. And then Miami-Dade County missed out on over $1 million in other areas. For example, there was going to be improvements to the Deering Estate, which is like a tourist attraction, big time attraction down south. $300,000 for the Humane Society, you know, $250,000 for an emergency shelter for homeless people, and then $200,000 for a new animal hospital in Miami-Dade's Metro 2. Now, the reason I'm focusing on these is because we are in an election year. And two of the biggest battleground congressional districts in Florida are in the Miami-Dade area. District 27, now held by Donna Shalala, she's being challenged by Maria Elvira Salazar again. And then District 26, that's held by Debbie Mercosell Powell, and she is being challenged by the Miami-Dade County Mayor, Carlos Jimenez. And, you know, losing this money has political implications here because on one end, for example, the money that the county lost is, you know, Debbie Mercosell Powell can point at Carlos Jimenez and say, look, you didn't get us this money. You know, you went out and you're supposed to be DeSantis' ally, and yet we lost, you know, $1 million for very important projects. Conversely, if the money had been approved, Carlos Jimenez could have said, look, I can bring the bacon. I can bring the money home. Same thing in District 27, where the pedestrian bridge and a couple other, District 27, the Shalala's district, also incorporates Little Havana. And there are a bunch of cuts to some programs in Little Havana, as well as that pedestrian bridge. So these cuts could, when you get into the fistfight that will be the congressional elections down in southern Miami-Dade, in these two districts now held by Democrats, but that historically have been Republican districts, these budget cuts are going to provide some ammunition to the incumbent Democrats to try to fend off what will be very strong challenges.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We tend to think about how the budget, you know, how DeSantis is impacted by the budget, how his political future, what he's trying to say about his priorities and his messaging, and how he's trying to position himself as a environmentally friendly Republican, as somebody who is, supporting public education by giving raises to teachers. But these, you know, the budget impacts politics at all levels in Florida, including the races you mentioned. And it just came to my mind that there's a state Senate race in the Fort Myers area where there's two Republicans duking it out in the primary there. And one of the Republicans is going after the other and saying that he has ties to Big Sugar, which is, an explosive accusation in that area because, there's a lot of concern about Lake Okeechobee and the waters that are released to that and to the Caloosahatchee River, and that they're polluted with fertilizer from sugar farms in that region. And so taking money from Big Sugar is seen as a no-no. And this Republican, Ray Rodriguez, is saying, well, no, I have been very supportive of environmental projects. And he pointed to the budget and how much funding there is in the budget for these environmental projects. So, the budget has can be a big political talking point for candidates as they go into some of these races. Well, not only did the budget need some attention, but there was a long list of bills approved by the legislature that DeSantis put off signing while he dealt with the virus. This week, the governor finally got around to dealing with those bills, signing everything from new abortion restrictions to an immigration control measure. John, it seems like a lifetime ago that we were talking about these bills, but they're significant changes, at least symbolically. How much of an impact do you think this new legislation will have?
Yeah, you're right. These policy bills and the fights that preceded their passage, they do seem like they're from, another century. But these bills you mentioned, the abortion restriction requiring parental consent for minors seeking abortions, and another requiring businesses to more closely check the legal status of new employees to restrict them from hiring undocumented workers. Those are things that play well in the Republican world. Just as we're talking about the budget as a political tool, these bills also, have some resonance when it comes to the campaign trail going in the months ahead. The governor is a cheerleader for President Trump, who's trailing in the state to Democrat Joe Biden. By most counts, Trump needs Florida electoral votes to have any chance of winning re-election. And DeSantis can help. One Republican told me it's almost like reverse coattails, where the governor can help the guy higher up instead of what's usual, the power coming from the top of the ticket. But approving parental consent for abortion, something that is likely to survive what will be a certain court challenge in this state, it'll survive probably because new justices that the governor has put on the state Supreme Court are probably pretty friendly to what the Republican legislature has done here. And also offering up a legislation that will crack down on undocumented immigrants may remind conservative voters in the state just what they're getting with the Republican brand, even in this time where it seems like everything in this election is going to be, overshadowed by coronavirus. But even if the coronavirus has them worried about their health and voters can't be happy about the wrecked economy, here DeSantis's actions this week for conservatives, even his fiscal balancing act with the budget, all that may be something that may somehow help the president going forward.
What do you think, Antonio? Do you think these issues could still resonate on the campaign trail, or is coronavirus sort of overtaking everything?
That's going to be a good point. I mean, right now, you're looking at the coronavirus issue. We're in the midst of a major spike. If you look at the numbers, between March 1st, which is around the time I believe that the first case in Florida was confirmed, and June 1st, we had somewhere in the order of the mid 50,000. And in the past month, in June alone, we had more than 100,000 cases. And I think right now, The attention is going back to the pandemic. There is palpable fear among a lot of small businesses that we may have to shut down. In fact, a bunch of counties across the state, big urban counties, are shutting down their beaches. The economic fallout from this is going to be powerful. And I think right now, as we dig into the pandemic and ultimately all of this eventually flows back to the state budget and these programs that we were talking about earlier. As we dig into the summer, I think the pandemic is going to be the number one issue. We are reporting, you know, about here in Palm Beach County that there are going to be the Storm the Beaches protests on July 4th. I think the pandemic right now is soon to become, will become, if it's not already, and it is actually, you know, the issue for a lot of Floridians.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the coronavirus really kind of overshadows everything, but elections are fought on the margins. And if you can get some certain number of voters fired up by passing abortion restrictions or immigration restrictions, I mean, that could make a difference, especially if it's the race is as tight as the recent elections have been in Florida. While the governor tended to some long neglected business with these bills and the budget, he continued to get heat for the worsening coronavirus outbreak in the state. As Antonio noted, Florida is now one of the worst virus hotspots in the nation. We have states like New York that are turning the tables and imposing quarantines on Floridians who travel there. Heading into the 4th of July weekend, we're seeing places like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach shut down beaches to limit the spread of the virus. The debate over whether to require masks in public continues to rage. Meanwhile, and maybe most alarming, we're seeing hospital beds are starting to fill up. Here in Sarasota, Sarasota Memorial Hospital, the biggest hospital in the region, they had the highest number of coronavirus inpatients that they've ever had this week. Hospitals in Miami and Broward County are not doing elective procedures again to try and conserve beds for coronavirus patients. Antonio, it seems like all the governor's talking points are getting knocked down. You know, he's talking about, oh, these are going to be these are younger people who are getting the virus, and they're not getting as severely ill. And we still have plenty of hospital capacity here, but that seems to be changing. And I think it's alarming for a lot of people. Does it seem like he's really lost control of the virus response here?
Yeah, to a certain extent. You know, this is the conversation that we've been having for the last month and a half as the state, you know, we started working on reporting and discussing this effort by the state to reopen. And as I've said in the past, and I'll reiterate, I think that he read the public mood to end the shutdown correctly. Then the question was, okay, but how do you manage then the reopening to make sure that you get the economy thriving again, but without a spike in cases that ultimately can undermine the opening of the economy? And I think this is where he's lost control. And part of it is because he plays this vacillation game where he is trying to make everybody happy, it seems. You know, like what we saw with the shelter in place order, where he would make the argument, well, not all counties have the same rate, so we got to treat them differently. And so then you had this patchwork of shelter in place rules until he was then forced to come out and issue the executive order. Once the White House guidelines came out, he issued the executive order shutting down the whole of the state. Now we're seeing the same issue with the mask issue, asking why doesn't he impose an executive order requiring people to wear masks in public? And it's the same argument. There's different rates of infections. Well, you know, that misses the point that this is a mobile state. People move around. It's a tourism state. We move around. And if one county lags in cases next to another county, it's only a matter of time before that county's cases spike. And I think that's where he is. I think he read the public mood correctly. Where he is misread is, you know, how to manage this. So he looks almost like a bench player, someone on the sidelines, to use a sports metaphor. And he's letting, you know, the counties and the cities play, you know, be the ones in the game on the field playing. And that from a standpoint of a chief executive, that's not the place that you want to be. And I think that he did this with the shelter in place order. He came across the same problem, and he's seeing the same thing with his ordinance on masks. You know, and even, you know, even now, Trump yesterday was saying, yeah, I'll wear a mask. And I'll look like the Lone Ranger. Well, you know, he allows in trying to placate everybody, instead of just taking the tough decision on this, he ends up losing the momentum and he ends up losing the reins on this. And this is going to cost him. You're already seeing beaches shut down in Miami and all of South Florida and other parts of the state. These small businesses missed out on Memorial Day. They're not going to miss out on July 4th weekend. This is going to have a cost, both economically and politically.
One thing that's kind of interesting is that, you know, as Antonio was indicating, a little bit of a disconnect from the mood of Floridians. What DeSantis has been trying to portray in many of his appearances is that this is only affecting, you know, younger people, that the median age of those now contracting coronavirus is in their 30s. And so that's a real positive thing. Of course, that means that those 30-year-olds, if they ever interact with anyone in their 60s or above 65, which is a vulnerable age, there's the potential of getting that older person sick. 20% of Florida's population is 65 and older. So DeSantis is basically telling them, do not leave your house. And but that wrecks Florida's economy. That is a big chunk of spending that is not happening right now. And I think generally there's that feeling that DeSantis is seeing or is touting that the economy is coming back and that everything is good. But at the same time, I think Floridians themselves don't believe that. And Floridians themselves are not participating in that economy. So that ain't happening either.
But John, that's a really risky strategy because number one, this virus is incredibly unpredictable. We've seen that for 6 months. It is just, you can't, it's hard to predict. Yeah, right now, it may not be affecting younger people the same way it affects older people, but we don't know how this is going to play out down the line. And then number two is the mixed message that if you tell young people repeatedly, as they have been doing since March, and I was there at that press conference with DeSantis and Rick Scott and Marco Rubio and Pence and the health officials, and they said the same thing. This is a disease that really impacts older people with serious underlying health conditions, younger people. This is not that big a deal for you. If you keep sending that message, how are young people going to react? Going to go out to the bars, going to go out to the restaurants and believe that this is not their problem.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are just worried that the governor has been very reactionary instead of anticipating what's going to happen with the virus, which is understandable as a politician. You know, people are nervous about taking action until they feel like the public will support the action that you're taking. But with a virus like this, it seems like you have to really anticipate what's going to happen. You know, to use another sports metaphor, it's like a quarterback, you know, throwing a pass. You don't throw to the receiver, you throw to where you think the receiver is going to be. And, you know, right now, if you're making judgments based on how bad things are right now, really, it's already baked in that they're going to be much worse in 2 weeks because of how the virus spreads. So this idea that you wait until things have reached a crisis point to start taking action, whether it's with hospitals or businesses or wearing masks or things like that, while it's an understandable response for politicians in normal times, it seems like it could be devastating with something like this. Well, we'll do some number picking here. John, you want to tell us what 390 is all about?
Yeah, my 390 is that was the number of coronavirus cases that Florida health officials had reported on the morning of March 19th when the Florida legislature gathered at the Capitol to approve the state's $93.2 billion budget that we were talking about earlier. That's the budget that DeSantis sliced $1 billion from this week, largely because of the rapid decline in tax collections, partially caused by that economic shutdown over the coronavirus. And the what then followed was a continuing decline in the economy, even as we've mostly reopened. But now we're seeing rapidly rising caseloads. Oh, and those 390 cases that we had then, we're closing in on 200,000 cases now. In mid-March, the legislature had finished all its work other than the budget when it had to return for 1 day to Tallahassee for a vote. About two dozen legislators stayed away at that time, pretty much out of concerns about traveling back to Tallahassee amid the virus, which had left the Capitol, you know, virtually empty for the vote. But at that time, House Speaker Jose Oliva said, quote, "We don't know what the future might bring. And I guess that sentiment still holds up. And it looks like it's going to hold up a lot longer than that bigger state budget did.
Yeah, the future did not bring good news. Antonio, you have three. What's that all about?
Yes, well, three is Florida's rank, as it by Ben Verified, which does the analysis that the Southern Poverty Law Center uses on keeping track of Confederate monument removals. And Florida ranks third in the United States in removing the rate of removal of Confederate statues. We've removed 22% of them, according to Ben Verified. We're number three behind Maryland, which has removed 70%, and California has removed 50%. So good news for those who justifiably oppose these memorials to individuals who basically fought to make sure that Black Americans stay enslaved. However, the bad news is that there are still, according to Ben Verified, 62 Confederate memorials remaining across the state. Now, Florida has 67 counties, so 62 means it's almost basically one per county, which means that this could end up being another one of those, social issues, wedge issues going into the 2020 election, particularly because the president himself has made this a big deal. This is his right now. It's not his big talking point. It's not coronavirus. It is defending these memorials as a part of defending the country's history and defending the culture of the country, that these are an integral part of the country, and even to the point where he has threatened to not sign a defense authorization bill because it does include provisions for renaming U.S. military bases that are named after Confederate generals. And so an interesting battle that at a time when the United States leads the world in the coronavirus cases, and we are the world's hotspot for cases, and that the rest of the planet, particularly the European Union, seems to have got a handle on the coronavirus epidemic and pandemic, it's an intriguing thought that what the president of the United States is talking about is defending monuments and memorials to those who fought to make sure others would not have freedom. So we were talking earlier about, how some of these issues, the budget cuts and the programs could play out, and some of the legislation has been signed, could play out in the 2020 election. Keep your eye on this issue of almost one Confederate memorial per county in Florida.
Yeah, you're right. I think that is one of the issues that is going to rise up and get some attention, regardless of the coronavirus, because the president has focused on it so much. And that's because he believes it really fires up his base. Well, my number is 6.4 percentage points is the lead that Joe Biden has over Donald Trump in the Real Clear Politics average of Florida polls right now. We're now exactly 4 months away from the November election, so it's a good time to check in on where things stand. And it's not looking that great for Trump right now. The president and his supporters, they tend to dismiss polling data that they don't like, but it's worth noting that the Real Clear Politics polling average showed Trump eking out a win over Hillary Clinton in Florida in 2016, and that's exactly what happened. One of the most recent Florida polls was conducted by Fox News, and it showed Trump trailing Biden by 9 percentage points in Florida. The Fox poll found that Trump is still struggling with two constituencies that he won in Florida in 2016, men and voters over 65. And that is not good for the president. Those are sort of his core constituencies, especially white men and white voters over 65. But he won both of those demographics over Hillary Clinton in Florida in 2016, and he's basically statistically tied with Biden among men in Florida and among voters over 65 right now. So that's a warning sign for him. The poll found that voters think Biden is better on immigration, race issues, and his approach to the coronavirus than Trump. Most telling, Trump's approval rating is at 44% in Florida. That's a 5-point drop since April, and we all know what's happened. Since April, coronavirus has raged across the country, and Trump has been widely criticized for his response. The president appears to be changing his approach, saying this week that he supports people wearing masks. We'll see if that continues and if it can make a difference in his support here in Florida. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy and Joseph Prezzano. Thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe. We're out of here.